This is the sermon preached by Reverend Rich Clarkson at St. Mary's Enville and St. Peter's Kimver on Sunday the 23rd of March 2025, the third Sunday of Lent. A reading from Isaiah chapter 55. Verses 1 to 9. Hear, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your earnings for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear and come to me. Listen, that you may live. I will make with you an everlasting covenant, my steadfast, sure love for David. See, I made him a witness to the peoples, a leader and commander for the peoples. Now you shall call nations that you do not know, and nations that you do not know shall run to you, because the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, he has glorified you. Seek the Lord while he may be found, call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake their way and the unrighteous their thoughts. Let them return to the Lord, that he may have mercy on them, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are my ways your ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. On a sunny day in the month of May, a burly bum came hiking down a shady lane with a sugar cane. He was looking for his liking. As he strolled along, he sang a song of a land of milk and honey, where a bum can stay for many a day and he don't need any money. Oh, the buzzing of the bees in the peppermint trees, the soda water fountains, where the lemonade springs and the bluebird sings in the big rock candy mountains. Classic bit of Burl Ives for you there. The big rock candy mountains, that place where American vagrants in the 19th century at least dreamed of ending up. Much like fishermen longed for Fiddler's Green or Dick Whittington longed for the gold-paved streets of London. It's natural when times are tough to imagine a different world, a better world. We all do it, don't we? It could be a simple thing like daydreaming about a summer holiday in the middle of a cold, wet winter. Or something deeper, like avoiding talking about a problem in a relationship because, to be honest, it's just less painful to pretend it isn't there. For many people who've spent long periods as prisoners of war or refugees, when you hear their stories afterwards, there was often some familiar place, perhaps a home or park or garden or even a particular coffee shop, which they kept thinking about. And for them, the hope of getting back to that place was what kept them going. And they often say that when they did eventually make it back there, it was nothing like they remembered it. But that's not the point. The hope was what kept them going. Hope is a powerful thing. In the Old Testament, one of the most significant experiences for the people of Israel was the exile, which happened in 587 BC, when their land was conquered by the Babylonians. Much of Jerusalem, including the temple, their holy place, was destroyed, and the population was scattered throughout the Babylonian Empire. The book of Isaiah was written in three parts around this time. The first part was addressed to the Israelites before the exile, warning them of what was to come. The second part was addressed to the Israelite people during that time of exile, a people who've suffered the horrors of conquest and seen their land and its holy places destroyed. The final part is written to them after God has restored their fortunes and returned them to home, which eventually did happen some 70 years after King Nebuchadnezzar first invaded. Our reading from Isaiah 55 comes from the end of that second part, written to the people during their time in exile. Remember that these are people who've been forced to leave their homes, their communities, their livelihoods, and make a new life in a strange land, often as slaves or certainly right back at the bottom of the social ladder. It's worth bearing in mind that there are plenty of parallels with the plight of migrants and refugees in our world today. Rohingya people from Myanmar, Palestinians from Gaza, Ukrainians, Syrians, Yemeni, Somali, Sudanese, there are so many people living in exile today who would identify deeply with these passengers. This part of Isaiah contains many passages familiar to us. It's often quoted in the New Testament, but to hear them in the light of a people in exile perhaps gives some different resonances. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not grow faint or weary. His understanding is unsearchable. They may be traumatized and exhausted, but God does not grow faint or weary. Those words give hope. Or as they look towards the mountains which separate them from their distant homeland, these words give hope. How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of the messenger who announces peace, who brings good news, who announces salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns. For people in exile, wondering whether they would ever see their homeland again, these prophecies would give them a glimmer of hope, opening up the possibility of God doing what they almost dare not dream of. It would have reminded them that God is far more powerful than Nebuchadnezzar, more powerful than any earthly ruler. It would have reminded them that despite the awfulness of their situation, God still loves and cares for them. And through these prophecies, God promised that he would one day restore them and that they would one day worship him again as their ancestors had. These words give hope. And after those incredible promises, we come to the climax of this section of Isaiah's prophecy. Again, remember that this was written for a people who have lost absolutely everything. A people who have lost hope. Everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread? And your earnings for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me, and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. As an aside, one of my life's dreams is to run a little bakery. And if I ever do that, I'm going to have that verse painted on the wall in big letters. Why spend your money on that which is not bread? Anyway, that's got nothing to do with what we're talking about. The point is this. Despite the challenges of the situation they found themselves in, the seeming hopelessness of the situation they found themselves in, there is still hope. Because with God, there is always still hope. When we look at our world today, when we look at the state of the Church of England today, it can be all too easy to feel hopeless. But these promises made by God through the prophet Isaiah can give us hope too. Hope that God has not abandoned us. Hope in a God of second chances, a God who restores what is exiled, heals what is broken, seeks out what is lost. We have a God of hope. Now in our gospel reading, Jesus told a parable, which if we're very honest, isn't one of his most memorable ones. It's not up there with the Good Samaritan or the parable of the talents. But he does make an important point, so it's worth taking a moment just to look at it. So there's a man who has a vineyard, and down in the corner of the vineyard is a little fig tree. For the last few years, the gardener's looked after the fig tree, but it's never really produced any fruit to speak of. And one day the man comes to have a look around, and he spots the little fig tree over in the corner, yet again bearing no fruit, and he decides he's had enough. Chop it down, he tells the gardener. Chop it down, burn it on the fire. We can use the soil for something more useful. But the gardener, leaning on his spade, looks at the tree and looks at the man and says, I don't know, let's give it one more year. I'll dig around it, put down some manure and we'll see how it goes. Perhaps it'll bear some fruit after all. Just give it another year. We have a God who never gives up on us. A God who keeps his promises, even if they're hard to believe at times, even if we have to be patient at times, even if we need to lean on our metaphorical spade like the gardener in the story and say, give it another year. With God, there is always hope. There is hope for the refugee fleeing the falling bombs, leaving home and family behind. Hope that they will find peace, safety, welcome. There is hope for our world with all its multitude of problems. That good will overcome evil, that love will overcome hate. There is hope for our churches, struggling to navigate a world which has lost its faith, if not its faith in God, then at least its faith in the church. And there's hope for each one of us, whatever our personal struggles or exiles. Hope that God is with us. And this is not a daydreamy kind of hope, pie in the sky like the big rock candy mountain. This is a hope that is steadfast and sure, built on the foundations of a God who has kept his promises in the past and will do so again. A hope that lifts our eyes from the struggles and the sorrows, from the tears and the terrors, and speaks into the darkness, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. Because God has promised that a better world is coming. Easter is around the corner. Hope is rising like a spring in the desert. So everyone who thirsts for righteousness, for justice, for peace, for healing, for reconciliation, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. Come and drink your fill. And your thirst will be quenched by the God of hope.